All right, welcome here to the Zoom line. I got so flustered. Joe Sinnott, Whitting Partners, executive coach and also host of the Energy Detox podcast. I already flubbed up my intro, Joe. Can you believe that? I already flubbed up my intro, so.
That sounded just fine to me, Jason. Yeah. I heard no flubs.
Well, it's opening day in baseball. We have March Madness happening in the Sweet 16 tournament. We've got the energy transition in full gear almost. It seems like there's about two more pieces they're going to put, and then they're going to like go full steam ahead here. And so, Joe, we're going to try to put about 40 minutes into 20 minutes, which will probably be in about 30 minutes. And that's kind of the way she blows. But the kind of the hook for me, and we'll talk about the Marcellus Coalition meeting that you just got back from too. But to me, the hook this week more than ever, and the vibe that's in the air more than ever, is are you producing? Are you producing? The economy is kind of going through a little bit of wonkiness right now. You've got the energy transition happening. You're starting to see inner fighting happening within industries as some want to go green, some want to stay the same. And it always boils down to the bottom line. Are you producing? Let's talk about these high stress situations, because if you're in March Madness and your job's on the line, are you producing? Because if you're one and done, you're all of a sudden St. John's, Rick Pitino, is he on the hot seat because he's one and done out? And Mike Tomlin in the NFL, boy, the guy just keeps winning, but in the playoffs, he's out every year. So this is high stress. You're a winner, but it's not enough. Talk me through this, Joe.
Yeah, no shortage of parallels between the sports world and the business world this time of year, that's for sure.
It's almost like they do it on purpose, Joe.
Yeah, but here's where I'll start, Jason, and obviously we'll go whatever direction you want to. I love a good sports analogy and metaphor when it comes to leadership and, as you say, productivity and the individual stresses that people feel. But typically the first step that I take when I'm working with individuals, especially in the business world or in the career coaching world, especially, is, all right, is this really as high stress, high pressure of a situation as you're making it out to be? Because in sports, it often is, Jason, right? Yeah, March Madness. I mean, it is one and done. So, I mean, we're not going to, sugarcoat the stresses that come with the actual tournament. And then again, even the coaching hot seats these days, it's real. But for so many people who think they're in a high stress situation or a high pressure situation, with a little bit of poking and prodding from me, again, in my day to day as a coach, a lot of times you reveal that it's not quite as on the same level as some of the sports, again, scenarios that you just laid out. So I'll pause there, Jason, but that's typically the first spot is, all right, that's fine. Yeah, I know. Yeah. High pressure, high demand, job, environment, industry, but is it? Is it true? Are we really dealing with these pressures?
So let's get into an example then. So the first example I'll give you is what's kind of happening in the energy industry right now, whether you're oil, gas, solar, wind, hydrogen, nuclear, geothermal, whatever energy you're in right now. I believe what's happening in the energy sector has already happened in the print sector and is happening in the broadcast sector, which is an identity crisis. Because when you are a major corporation or a major company and you've been chunking along for a long time like the newspaper industry did, you got to remember the newspaper industry virtually had a monopoly in about 90% of the cities in the United States. And within about a 10-year period when the internet came, that was the paradigm shift to where they all went bankrupt. That's happening in the energy sector right now, whether it's regulations, whether it's the green movement. Honestly, there's about 15 different things you can point at. That's what a paradigm shift is when so much transition happens, that's what's going on. So talk me through the identity crisis that somebody can have in one of these high pressure situations. It happens in sports too. Are we going to play zone? Are we man on man? Are we, see what I mean? So it is universal. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so a couple thoughts on that. Again, we'll mix and match the industries and the analogies here, but let's start with what you talked about from a media standpoint. If the identity crisis is stemming from the fact that you identify as being in the newspaper industry or working in a specific area, maybe specific focus, whether it's, you know, maybe you're a sports writer, or maybe it's, you know, fashion, culture, whatever. Again, it's very easy to have an identity crisis when trends change and readership changes and everything else. So again, the next question is, all right, well, is that really your identity? Is there something deeper? You know, if you're a good writer, or you're a good communicator, or you have a good message, does it really matter what the medium is? Does it really matter what topic you're communicating? And again, sometimes the answer is yes, but by and large, it's, hey, shouldn't your identity be wrapped up in something that's not as surface level? Or again, let's flip it back to sports. You just talked about, yeah, you know, man-on-man defense or zone or whatever. Again, at the end of the day, if you're a good coach and you're able to motivate players and help develop players, does it really matter what scheme you're using? Or are you going to be there in the long run because you can recruit, because you can connect with players? So, you know, getting hung up on one season, one game, one tournament, whatever, again, do you want to be identified as the person who won the, you know, whatever, won the your conference tournament in 2025? Or do you want to be identified as that steady coach who is reliable, who is predictable, who, again, has, you know, two or three decades? So, again, if that makes sense, Jason, again, it's sorting through. When you say identity crisis, it's, all right, well, let's start with how you identify yourself, because very often it is a, you know, I would call it an intermediate identification, not that deeper thing that, again, last thing I'll say on this is, you know, the thing that isn't changing or shouldn't be changing. So same thing when you talk about careers, when you talk about, you know, changes in the energy mix, there's, you know, way more that isn't changing about the world, as difficult as that might seem to believe at times, but there's a lot more that's not changing than is. So that's, again, where I typically try to start with folks.
And we can even keep an analogy right in your home state, because there's a great documentary about Rocky Balboa. And this is in Rocky II. I know I said documentary. I'm being a little bit snarky and fun here. But in Rocky II, he had to change his identity to a left-handed fighter from a right-handed fighter in order to achieve his goal. And it's not the same, but it kind of is, because sometimes you have to go outside of your comfort zone in order to grow. And that's one of the things that my takeaway has been from personal experiences through the media is, you know, you mentioned before, you know, what's your identity? Well, a lot of reporters, they're writers. A lot of people in radio are DJs, or they're reporters or broadcast journalists. And then when you're in management, well, your identity is you're a manager for a media company. So even internally, it's hard to get on the same page with your identity. That's why having a coach is so necessary to corral everybody to say, okay, I understand that we're all individuals, but we do have the same goal. We have the same goal here. And when I take a look at one of the other issues facing the energy industry, besides the high pressure situation that comes with the day-to-day operations, you also have the identity crisis going on right now in the energy industry, as the media industry has been going through for over a decade. But there's so much subsidies, government grants, and large dollar figures that, man, if you don't get it on the renewal, there's 300 people gone. There's, you know, and so that's an extra layer of stress, Joe. That's kind of new. And whether it's research dollars, or whether it's, you know, to try to make sure a regulation gets down because we're going to do this for the flaring, or we're going to do this for that. Talk to me about the layered stresses in a high pressure situation, because that's becoming more and more common as we're seeing some of the subsidies and regulations trickle in throughout the energy industry specifically.
Got it. Well, I think when it comes to the layered stresses, Jason, the biggest mistake that a lot of leaders make is that, you know, they don't do a good job of articulating the extra risk that typically comes the more that you layer on different things. So the more that you deviate or build upon your core business, for example. So, you know, if your core business has expanded because of things like, you know, money that was dangled in front of companies to go forth and do certain things. Again, I'm not saying that's good or bad or whatever, but, you know, if you move beyond your core strength, that's going to come with some risk. And again, if you're a leader who doesn't articulate that to the people involved, to, as you said, you know, the fact that a regulation or, you know, stroke of a pen can lead to 300 people getting laid off at your company or, you know, your industry in a heartbeat. Well, again, what compounds the stress of that situation? It's the fact that if you as a leader don't feel like you've prepared or at least, you know, kind of given a heads up to the people that are involved in that so that they don't go forth and they're, you know, operating in an ignorant manner, that's going to add stress. Whereas if you're upfront from the beginning and say, hey, look, this is moving beyond our core strength. There is definitely more risk to this because it's relatively contingent upon factors that are outside of our control. So as we move forth, we're going to stay focused, but at the same time, I want you to be, preparing for the possibility, whatever that percentage chance of it happening is, I want you to prepare and know that that's a reality at all given times. And again, this sounds so great in hindsight. And unfortunately, a lot of times I'm working with people, you know, who are looking at things, you know, with the benefit of hindsight. But to be a successful leader, a sustainable leader, you know, requires you to be a proactive leader and recognize it, again, through the lens of risk, Jason. So again, picking up the pieces after the fact, that's not always an easy task. I'll be honest about that. We could talk about it, but you know, the best thing you could do is say, okay, how do I put myself and my team in a position next time where, again, those additional layers that you're talking about, you know, don't add extra stress when inevitably some of those layers get pulled away.
You know, right now there's a lot of change that's going on, whether it's tariffs, whether it's new regulations or repealing of regulations. And so when I look around, you know, I've been covering the oil and gas industry and the energy industry now for about 15 years. And there's a changing of guard that's happening. And it's whether every 4 years, every 6 years, every 8 years, something like that. Well, there has been one in the last 6 months specifically. I'm sure it's election related, but it's also just this new marketplace that's out there, whether it's the green identity that people are trying to get with, or whether it's the, you know, like I said, some of the industry splitting on certain ideologies, whether it's ethanol or carbon capture or hydrogen or whatever the case is. Whenever you have growth, you have growing pains. Mm-hmm. What advice would you have for those people right now? Because honestly, I could see where your services would be more than needed right now for a lot of these people. Not only is, you know, spring change in the air, but we've got a changing of guard happening here to where having a extra set of eyeballs, having an extra, you know, person outside perspective, I guess, would be the best way to really sum it up. Because somebody who's coming in to either keep culture going, change culture, or enhance culture, man, having that outside perspective is, in my opinion, is very valuable. But talk to me a little bit about that, because on one hand, the opportunity is good for you to give yourself a nice little plug in a commercial. But on the other hand, the reality is that your services are needed now more than they were like last year or the year before, because there is such a changing of guard, Joe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I guess I appreciate the opportunity for a plug or commercial, though maybe I'm going to squander that opportunity, because I'm going to say that it's less about the outside perspective, Jason, that I bring to organizations when, you know, I go in and help them with all the different things you just said. It's more about the independent ability to ask questions, right? You know, I can come in and I can say things, but more significantly, I can ask things that, you know, might be uncomfortable for people internally to ask. So even if I'm not bringing my perspective, which I do, obviously, even if I'm not bringing in some suggestions or, you know, strategies that people can deploy, which if that's what they're looking for, fine. But the biggest value that I bring is being able to come in independently and ask questions. So challenge them on, again, what their identity is. Challenge them on what they think is the best path forward, especially when it comes to the development of their people and the long-term, you know, sustainable growth from a again, a personnel development standpoint. You know, that's what I bring. And again, if they want solutions to those problems, happy to talk through that too. But it starts with, and again, this isn't scientific, but it starts with asking good, open questions that challenge the, you know, the conventions and the status quo, if you will, as cliche as that sounds, for people that have been in positions and, you know, have often gotten comfortable. So again, I don't know how much of a sales pitch that is, but I'll be honest, Jason, that's where I bring the most value. And of course, you know, when I'm doing that in the context of the oil and gas industry in particular, I like to think I'm able to ask a little bit better questions than just, you know, somebody off the street there coming in to poke and prod in an organization.
Do you do business owners too, or just primarily executives?
Oh yeah, it runs the gamut. I mean, it's, you know, it and includes, honestly, there's been I'd say slightly above average from a career coaching standpoint, people that are looking to shift and become a business owner potentially. So, you know,
Oh.
it's established business owners. You know, most of my work is on the corporate side, but certainly working with people who are in career transition or looking to get into a career transition, if you will. Yeah, there's a sizable number of folks out there that say, hey, in part because of the gyrations and the change and everything else that you're talking about, Jason, you know, how do I take a little bit more ownership? How do I translate my experience into something that gives me, you know, a little bit more independence, freedom, and quite frankly, in some cases, you know, might play to my strengths more than being a part of a bigger organization. So, yeah, it runs the gamut, Jason, which is why, you know, it's I love it. You know, I love the diversity, if you will, of the folks that I get to work with, not just from, you know, their backgrounds, but certainly, you know, where they are in their careers.
You know, one show I'd like us to do, maybe the next show we do, and it'd be good to promote it too, because I think people would appreciate the context of the show. Which now, what was the merger, and how long was the merger that you were a part of? Was it EQT or Rice? I forget which ones it was, but to explain just kind of a short elevator pitch about the merger that you were a part of with the companies, and what the timeline from when you first heard about it to when it happened was.
Sure. So that merger acquisition, if you will, was kicked off in the middle of 2017. And that was EQT acquiring Rice Energy for, well, on the
I
order
did
of
get a
what,
hold, all
$8 billion,
right.
something like that. So that was kicked off middle of 2017 and then was finalized towards the, sorry, what did I say? 2017. So middle of 2017, finalized. I think November of 2017, but then that kicked off a whole series of a very public and entertaining, I guess depending on your definition of entertainment, corporate fun, if you will. So basically, by the end of 2018, about a year after the deal that was consummated, which had formed, which was at the time the largest natural gas producer in the United States, that that title has since been taken over by Expand Energy. But anyway, by the end of 2018. Some of the Rice Energy folks launched a takeover campaign, a proxy battle, and essentially pushed out all of or most of EQT's legacy senior management. So by the middle of 2019, so again, from a time frame standpoint, you're looking at it basically 2 years from the time that the acquisition kicked off. Essentially, the old guard came in, or the new guard took over the old guard, or the old guard, the new guard. And there was a sweeping change of management. So I'll pause there. Again, I think at some point I am sure there'll be a movie or a book written about it that will, you know, even just the public story alone is as you can imagine, you know, pretty entertaining. Again, we'll stick with that word for now, Jason.
Well, I'd like to do a interview, podcast, show, whatever they're called these days, because every term seems to work. Depends on who your audience is and what age. Some people that I speak to, I still have to say tape it, because they still apparently have VHS recorders with the tape or something like that. Because I'll say, you know, like record it, and they'll look at me, and I'll say tape it, and they'll like, oh, okay, I got it. Anyway, no, I think it'd be interesting to kind of go through a little bit. You know, obviously nothing that'll get you sued, but at the same time, from an executive coach's point of view, all the kind of places that maybe, you know, could have needed it, or this should have been done, or this could have been done differently, or when a merger acquisition is happening, this is what we experienced, and this is why a coach was needed at that time, type of a thing. Because there's so many mergers and acquisitions happening in the energy industry that having somebody who's been through it before, man, that's a valuable thing. That's a really valuable thing, because there are a lot of people right now, they've never been through anything like that. And they're driving these ships because, you know, in some cases nepotism, in other cases they work their way up there, but either case, they've never experienced anything like that. Uncharted waters is uncharted waters, you know. So think of some bullet points that might be interesting, and I'll do the same, because that I think that would be very well received too by the industry. All ages, all demographics, and everything like that. So anyway, I'm not sure what your thoughts are on that, but.
Yeah, that sounds, well, again, I think it's all under the umbrella of navigating change, and whether it's, you know, big changes in your personal life or your professional life. And I think, you know, multi-billion dollar acquisitions, which again are, you know, popping up, seems probably not daily, but, you know, certainly weekly, you know, those are, it's change on steroids. So yeah, I think it's always a valuable topic. To your point, you know, having gone through it and having that perspective definitely leads to some useful insights. But at the same time, as I said before, just the public, you know, knowledge of these things alone gives you enough to launch into. You know, you don't need to go down the path of anything that would be proprietary or top secret or anything to, you know, to speak to the people that are involved, the timing, as you put out before, you know, that how these things are just, it's, you know, they evolve, and, you know, it seems like something, it closed, one deal closes on a Monday, and then on Friday, you know, the next one is announced. So yeah, you know, how do individuals, forget the corporations, but how do individuals successfully navigate that? So yeah, I think it's a great idea. One other thing I'll just point out too, to kind of set up, you know, that potential future conversation, Jason, is when I went through that 2017 to 2019 period, I had the luxury of having an executive coach that was company sponsored, and that was in place before, I think it was early 2017. So, you know, even my transition into executive coaching was fueled in part because I saw the value of it. I saw the value for me, again, not just as a leader, as a manager going through that and helping lead teams through that, but also my personal life, right? You know, how do I manage things from a family standpoint? So again, I'd be remiss not to, you know, to give credit for the fact that, man, I had a coach at the time and I saw the benefits, and, you know, that was part of the impetus to go forth and be one of those resources to help others in similar positions.
That's important to know, because, you know, for me, I'm a method journalist, so I don't go write a story on skydiving until I've actually done skydiving, right? So I got to experience it. And, you know, in today's world, executive coaching is one of those where you can just order a kit online and check on the steps. So to hear that, you know, you actually have experience and some context and some depth with it, that is very important to point out, because there are, I mean, I wouldn't hire a builder that just watched some YouTube videos and is checking boxes. You know, you want somebody who's actually built a shed before or something like that, or a house, you know, at the very least a house, for crying out loud. So that's interesting to know. I guess I never knew that's where that stemmed from, that you had a executive coach going through that, company sponsored too. And, you know, as we were talking, I was even thinking that in previous conversations, I understand that a lot of this is initiated by human resources, and maybe it's the executive telling human resources to reach out to you, but a lot of times you'd be slotted as a human resource budgetary item. But I got to tell you, have you ever been in the marketing? Because what you're talking about in some of these cases of mergers and acquisitions, that's part of public relations, is understanding what to say, how to say it, when to say it, how to manage so your employees aren't going out on social media and blasting you and that sort of thing. You know, talk to me a little bit about that duopoly of, or the duality, not duopoly, duality of public relations and human resources, because that's, sometimes they work against each other. They do, but they're supposed to be in sync.
Well, whether they're working against each other or they're in sync, and I mean, it all is under the umbrella of communication, right, Jason? Which, honestly, I feel like I throw out this number all the time. I don't know. I probably need to go back and vet it. But about 40% of my leadership coaching is under the umbrella of communication. So yeah, there's, you know, you need to be good from a strategy standpoint, decision-making standpoint, executive presence standpoint. But by and large, the difference between effective leadership and ineffective leadership is communication. So to your point, Jason, you know, even though I'm not a communication specialist, you know, I'm not a marketer, I do engage both from a company level and from an industry level, and some of my involvement with industry organizations in helping to refine messaging and helping to communicate more effectively with stakeholders, whether that's members of the community, whether it's investors, whether it's politicians, whoever it is. again, they need a clear, cohesive message that's going to resonate with them, that's going to stick with them. And it's no different when you bring it back to individual managers and their teams, or, you know, an individual on their team that they're trying to connect to. So again, I don't market myself as a communications expert, but in essence, that is where I spend a good amount of my time. And again, when it comes to the value of executive coaching, most of the value that's delivered is me working one-on-one with an individual and outlining a plan of attack for a conversation, for a presentation, any number of different means for that individual to communicate a message to somebody else. So,
communication, courage, and now we're going to go to coalition, the Marcellus Coalition. My understanding is that you were just at one of their recent meetings and events. So let's get an update from the Marcellus, please.
Yeah, so, well, I'll start with the coalition itself. So the Marcellus Shale Coalition is a Pennsylvania-based organization that supports the shale industry here in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. I've been a member, my company's been a member since 2021, and happy to say I'm an active member. So, you know, do attend all of the member meetings, which, again, I just came from here today. They had basically a quarterly meeting. So this one happened to be in Pittsburgh, close by. They move it around the state of Pennsylvania, of course. So this was one of their closed meetings. So this is limited to members, but for anybody that's listening, that's interested in, you know, kind of what's going on here in the Marcellus in Pennsylvania, they do have their annual event that's up in Erie, Pennsylvania. It is open to the public. It draws hundreds of folks. It is a top-notch event, and that is called Shale Insight. So a bit of a plug for that, because honestly, that's what got me into the Marcellus Shale Coalition, I should say. I went to that, saw the value, saw the level of connections, saw the insights, no pun intended, that, you know, were there for the taking, and, you know, it became a no-brainer for me to then join the organization. So that's, again, a high-level view of the organization and how anybody can take advantage of it. As far as the meeting I was just at, again, a membership meeting, lots of different committees. Funnily enough, you know, coming back to your comment about communication and, again, you know, sort of you know, delivering a message to folks, one of the committees that I'm an active member of is the Public Relations and Education Committee. And, you know, part of that committee's job is, again, to look for new ways to convey the story of the industry to stakeholders to make sure that, you know, at least here in Pennsylvania, you know, we continue to grow on the positive view that your average citizen has of natural gas. You know, quick stat here, this is all out there in the public domain, but, you know, exit polls from the last election show that natural gas has a positive favorability rating. And so the question is, okay, you know, how do you build on that? How do you not rest on your laurels, but make sure that everybody here in Pennsylvania understands the basics of natural gas? I don't care whether they're pro or anti, you know, do they at least understand the fundamentals so that they can make an informed decision about how natural gas impacts, I would argue positively impacts, you know, their day-to-day life, no matter how, you know, how many degrees removed they think they are from the industry. So again, I'll pause there, but can't say enough positive things about the impact that the Marcellus Shale Coalition has had on the industry as a whole, the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, that includes all its citizens, and then certainly for me as an individual contributor and as a business owner.
And the Marcellus Shale Coalition, Ohio's included in there and everybody else, or no?
No, so this is certainly, you know, when it comes to Ohio and West Virginia in particular, they are closely related. They are cousins, if you will. They do have, you know, their own organizations that, you know, do similar things, but because there's so much state-specific work that has to be done, you know, when it comes to, you know, permitting and regulations and informing the decision makers and the lawmakers in Harrisburg, you know, it does make sense to have state-specific organizations. So this is one of those, but obviously a lot of the messaging, a lot of the trends, a lot of the insights, a lot of the opportunities to, again, convey a clear message. Clearly they cross state lines, Jason, but this is a PA-focused organization.
Yeah, obviously the goals are the same. The end goals are very much the same. And the only reason I bring it up is because yesterday, I believe the House and the Senate in Ohio passed some very big sweeping legislation for some coal plants, natural gas, and some green initiatives. And so it's not quite law yet, so I don't want to get into it too much. But just so people are aware that Ohio has some things happening there currently in their legislative session. And Joe just kind of gave us an update what's happening out on the Pennsylvania side. Now we got to find Randy Moss and some West Virginia person to maybe give us the West Virginia update on the Marcellus Utica shale play out there, Joe. But either way, final thoughts here as we kind of wrap up our interview here. I was kind of keeping it around a half hour. See if we can put 40 pounds of potatoes in this 20-pound sack. And the podcast, new episode out or update from your personal business, please.
Personal business, podcast business. Let's see. Well, I did actually release an episode this week that corresponded to a conversation that I was asked to facilitate at the Marcellus Shale Coalition meeting. So latest episode, episode 107 of the Energy Detox is out. Again, that was prompted by a conversation about how to effectively network, how to take advantage of industry organizations, how to take advantage of meetings and events. So the conversation that I led, the facilitation that we had today for the Marcellus Shale Coalition, you know, that was honestly the input there was driven by the members. You know, I was just there, as I said earlier, you know, to put on my hat of asking questions, asking open questions, and trusting the membership to share their feedback. Whereas the podcast, which is more of a monologue there and me on my soapbox for 10 or 15 minutes per episode, you know, that does go forth and share some of my own insights and tidbits and recommendations. So folks are looking to, again, if nothing else, be exposed to some questions that they can ask themselves to become more effective when it comes to, you know, not just networking, but connecting with other human beings in general. Go ahead and check out that episode. You can do so on whatever your favorite podcast app is. All the episodes are also on YouTube. And you can also head on over to theenergydetox.com, which has all the links to everything, show notes, transcripts, etc.
And of course, for any of you people listening out there on the radio audience, you'll hear it on This Week in Energy as well. A lot of times, Joe, I'd like to drop your podcast as a nice little segment if you've got something, and like sounds like you do this week as well. It's kind of fun to put it out there, and of course these interviews as well. So thank you for your time, sir, today, and we'll be chatting down the line, okay?
All right. Thank you, as always, Jason. Take care.